Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And my guest today is Becky Welland. Becky is a retired social worker. She's also a family therapist and educator in the Department of Applied Psychology at Antioch University in Keene, New Hampshire. And since the 1960s, she's been a dedicated anti-war and civil rights activist with greater causes than those. Since June 8th, she's been at the Gaza-Rafah border. That's the Gaza-Egyptian border. At that border crossing, as part of an ad hoc international nonviolent coalition to break the over 2-year siege and liberate the imprisoned 1.5 million population of Gaza, literally imprisoned. We'll talk about it. We want to talk about her mercy mission, why it's important. And let me just give you a very brief background. In February 2006, there was a democratic election conducted in occupied Palestine. Hamas won convincingly, you could say overwhelmingly, and the election was judged free and democratic. Israel tried to subvert it. Hamas won anyway. Palestinians were tired of Fatah corruption. The current West Bank government under Mahmoud Abbas, who's a quisling, he's a traitor. He sold out. Oh, he sold out years ago. He sold out going back before the Oslo Agreement in 1993, surrendering to Israeli authority, being willing to be Israel's enforcer against his own people, he and others. Well, Hamas won the election. They're the legitimate government of occupied Palestine. Now it splits. Fatah was unleashed with U.S. and Israeli support and weapons and so on against Hamas. Hamas won out in Gaza. Fatah took over in the West Bank, continues to repress its own people, continues to conduct an insurgency against Hamas in Gaza, again with support from Washington and Israel. For over 2 years now, Gaza has been under siege, and we had programs early this year on Israel's Operation Cast Lead, the war on Gaza that went on for about 3 weeks. Absolutely devastating, killing over 1,400 people, destroying thousands, either destroying or basically wrecking thousands of structures, homes, buildings, government buildings, fishing boats, you name it, mosques. One of the marching orders was to attack all mosques. Imagine that, attack all mosques. They were dangerous sites, treating civilians no differently than legitimate Hamas defense. Call them combatants, that's what they were. It was a legitimate defense force, legitimately defending the occupied people of Gaza. Israel waged a merciless war, attacking civilians, treating them no differently than combatants. And Gaza has been under siege for over 2 years. After the war ended, after the conflict ended, the latest one, Gaza has remained under siege. Becky, are we connected?
Yes, we are.
Oh, Becky, hi. I wanted to give some background, just in case listeners may not be aware of all that's going on. That music needs a break. Let's take it, and then we'll come back, and we'll let listeners hear from you on what's going on there right now.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
With Becky Welland. Becky, you know, I forgot exactly how to pronounce your name. It is Welland, not Welland, right?
It's Wieland, that's right.
It's Wieland. I think I deleted the, I get so many emails I can't save them. Well, alright. I would drown in them. And I think one of them you explained how to pronounce your name. And I saved a couple, but I deleted that one. And I said, oh, I hope I remember right. It's Wieland. But Becky, you've been there now.
It's Wieland.
It's Wieland. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
That's all right.
Well, you should hear the way my name is butchered. It's butchered all the time. I'm used to it. I just chuckle about it. But, Becky, you've been there since the 8th of June. You're right on the border. Gazans are literally locked in prison. Israel has banned essential-to-life stuff from coming in. It's astonishing. Stuff that absolutely has nothing to do with violence, with militarism of any kind. Just things that people need to survive in their daily life. Medicines, food items, blankets, all kinds of things.
That's right. One of the things we've noted, Steve, is that in most of the world, a bag of cement costs you $50. Costs you $4. In Chicago, in my town of Northampton, in Rome, anywhere in the world, it's about $4. In Gaza, it's about $50 because there's so many different people who have to handle it because it can't just go through with regular commerce the way that happens in the whole rest of the world. So that's one example of the things that people need to rebuild their homes, to rebuild their lives.
My understanding is Israel has prohibited cement, concrete, from coming into Gaza. They won't allow any in.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm here at the Rafah, Egypt border, where it's every bit as bad as you could imagine. What I've witnessed more than anything else is hundreds of Palestinians who want to go home to visit their families, and they're not able to get across the border. And every day I go to the border and say, is it open today? And they say no. And they say, and I say, well, will it be open tomorrow? And they say no, maybe the next day. And there's this game. It's one thing to play it with me, who just wants the border open, but with the lives of people who are coming to see aging parents, to family weddings, to see family members who were besieged, some of whom lost their lives in the war in December and January. That this kind of game playing with their lives goes on day in and day out with no regard for their humanity, no regard for their personhood.
Becky, it's the reason I've mentioned it in a number of articles. And I wrote one article in using this in the title months back. I referred to what Israel is doing is committing slow motion genocide against the people of Gaza, really against the people in the occupied territories. It's pretty bad in the West Bank also, except the West Bank is not under siege. But it is outrageous, and Israel gets away with it because the world community turns a blind eye. And here, you're on the Egyptian side of the border.
I am. And part of the reason we're here is because Egypt is every bit as complicit with this siege as Israel is. They have totally joined with Israel around keeping the border closed, and they use the lamest excuses. They won't let innocent families go across because you never know what they're going to be carrying. Well, if you've ever crossed any border, you know how bags are searched, how everything goes through detectors. These people are simply carrying parts of their lives with them.
Oh,
and it was very interesting that 2 weeks ago, a shipment of 15 vehicles, 15 trucks carrying food from Saudi Arabia got through the border in 1 hour. This is unheard of here. Nobody gets through this border in 1 hour. When George Galloway's people came, basically bringing the same things, but in addition to food, they were bringing medical supplies. They were bringing very necessary equipment to help people live healthy lives. They have been stopped, you know, and most of their things are still sitting in Alexandria, Egypt, where the Egyptian government won't release them.
It really is shocking, Patty.
So I think it's important to note not only is it what Israel is doing, but what Egypt is doing in collusion with them.
This goes back to 1978, the so-called Camp David Accords. Mubarak, I think that was just before. That was Sadat. Mubarak, the current reigning dictator of Egypt, he's been around for almost 30 years, but he was not around in 1970. He was around, but he was not the dictator of Egypt at the time. He was in the wings waiting after Sadat was murdered, and shortly afterwards he came to power. But Egypt was bought off back then. Washington decided that these wars just weren't, I mean, these big ones where three Arab countries go to war with Israel or Israel attacks three Arab countries, this just wasn't getting anywhere. So the most dangerous one potentially was Egypt. It's the biggest country. I guess it has the strongest military. Jordan also, both countries bordering Israel, and Syria, the other one bordering Israel. Well, they didn't buy off Syria. They bought up Jordan later on, and they bought off Egypt with something like $1 billion a year in so-called aid that goes to weapons and those kinds of things. And Mubarak has been in Washington's pocket, in Tel Aviv's pocket ever since. So as you say rightly, Egypt is a co-conspirator in this. They are helping to starve fellow Arabs to death in service to their benefactor in Washington.
Yes, I mean, this is the biggest stranglehold for folks who don't see the map daily. The Egyptian entrance to Gaza is the most normal way to get in. It's the only entrance that's not surrounded by Israel. It is the most natural way. It's part of the old Silk Route. And the commerce that would allow people in Gaza to not be so dependent on either Israel's produce or charity would be for them to have justice. And that's part of why we're here. We're demanding justice for the people of Gaza, justice for the people of all Palestine. But right here, our focus is on ending this siege, opening the border so that people can come and go, so that commerce can happen, so that the people of Gaza will not be kept in this position of needing charity, but rather a first step in their getting justice.
Well, again, without question.
And I'll tell you a little more. I'm very heartened. We've been at the border every day. We've been here constantly. We've camped out. We have tents. We have everything we need. And what we don't have, we get brought in by different friends. But we have been here since the 13th of June. And just yesterday, four young Egyptians, activists and humanitarians, came and reminded us of a few more things we need to do. They're energized. They're ready to do organizing. They want to bring busloads of mothers, Egyptian mothers, for justice. They're going to put together a website for us. And we will stay here until the siege is broken. Now, the latest carrot that Egypt has been dangling is if Hamas and Fatah can resolve their differences, and who's brokering this? Egypt. If they can resolve their differences, the border will be open. This is about as absurd a scenario as one could imagine. And first of all, the date that they were supposed to come to resolution was July 6th. More recently it was moved to July 27th or 28th, and now it's been postponed until August. With Egypt brokering negotiations between Fatah and Hamas. Don't put any money on that one.
Well, these are just delaying tactics, Patty. It's like the negotiations going on after Washington staged a coup in late June in Honduras. Well, the democratically elected president is out of the country. The coup d'etat government won't let him come back in. Washington refuses to call a coup a coup. I don't know what else it is. The military rushed the guy out of the country in his pajamas violently. It's a wonder they didn't kill him. But he's still out. And they're simply, in basketball, they talk about running out the clock. So they're running out the clock until maybe people will forget about it. Hopefully they won't. And they're doing the same thing for the people of Gaza. They keep delaying and delaying and delaying and delaying. I guess they're delaying until they starve them all to death. Then there's no more arguments.
Yes. It's just to wear them down. And the saddest part, Steve, is that the people who get worn down are the Palestinians who come back day after day to the border, hoping to be able to cross over. A woman from Saudi Arabia and her daughter were here 2 days ago, and she was explaining to me that if she were able to, she would be at her house in Rafah in
Patty,
5 minutes.
We need to break again, Patty. Let's do that, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Paki Wallen at the Egyptian-Gaza border, the Rafah border, the main border that's unguarded by Israeli stormtroopers. So it's guarded by Egyptian stormtroopers who refuse to let in crucially needed aid, essential things, enough food. Well, there's never enough food. But what comes by dedicated activists bringing it, medicines that are needed. Becky, it goes on and on. I've written many articles on this, and I was literally in overdrive back in late December and January during Israel's assault on Gaza, so-called Operation Cast Lead, a 3-week blitzkrieg that literally murdered at least 1,400 people, destroyed thousands of buildings. I mentioned this briefly at the outset. It was really horrific, and Israel has done similar things more or less for over 6 decades, and yet Palestinians persist. Israel thinks they can wear them down. Well, over 6 decades have gone on, and so far Palestinians refuse to be worn down. What a testimony.
It's quite extraordinary. I'm amazed daily. Sometimes it's the same people who come day after day. Other times, they're new people who come, Palestinians who live in other countries. Even, I'll tell you a story that was the most appalling in light of politics. About 2 weeks ago, a UN conference ended in Cairo, and all the delegates went home. Well, the 10 Palestinian delegates who were traveling on UN passports, they're Palestinians, people who live in Gaza, traveling on UN passports, were not allowed to cross the border. That's how bad it is. It's not simply even the ordinary Palestinian for whom this is so painful, but the folks who work for the UN who are traveling on UN passports were not able to get into Gaza.
It really is shocking, Paki. And of course, there have been also mercy missions. Boats that have come from Cyprus delivering, again, crucial, essential to life aid. I think one of them got through. This has been going on. A number of them have come. But generally, the Israeli Navy will stop them. Sometimes they'll ram the boats. They'll arrest the people on them. They'll put them in prison. I mean, there've been some noted people on these boats. A Nobel Peace Prize winner, a U.S. Congresswoman. There were British people of some note that were on them in the past, and Israel treats them like they're thugs.
Yes. Well, Israel acts like thugs in those regards, so that's how they treat them. But, you know, I want to note a difference. Whereas the people who came in the boat and the George Galloway convoy were bringing much-needed immediate assistance, they weren't allowed to get in. What we're asking for is beyond that. We're demanding that this border be opened so that they can stop relying on charity that doesn't even get in. And the boats, I think, are so symbolic in that the Israeli government will not allow humanitarian aid by boat to go into Gaza. The Egyptian government will not allow humanitarian aid to go in by truck, by vehicle, into Gaza. It's a total stranglehold. It's a siege, as you mentioned. And we're here to besiege the siege. We're here to end the siege. And it's so heartening that we've got French people, we've got people from England, we've got folks from the U.S., in addition to the Egyptians, the courageous Egyptians who are here. And I have to really, really commend them because they are at greater risk because this is quite a repressed situation here. The government is most repressive. I've been blown away by how everything here goes back to, quote, intelligence. And I have to also say something about the folks here at the border. There are soldiers and there are police officers. And everyone is just, quote, doing his job. And the problem, one of the problems is they have absolutely no authority. They have absolutely no power. So what they do is they become bullies to the Palestinians. And the abuse that Palestinians take is just something that is almost unfathomable. The long suffering of the Palestinian people, you know, when you said, yes, it's been over six decades, there's a sound in the background, there's a tank with Egyptian soldiers driving by. But in the evenings, when everything is quiet, we have had very good conversations. We've been doing teach-ins with some of the soldiers and with some of the police who are simply doing their jobs. And we've been able to have them at least become a little more humane toward both us and especially toward the Palestinians.
Becky, we need
but
to break again.
They have absolutely no power.
I
so they can immediately revert to being bullied, and the Palestinians withstand it all.
Becky, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Gaza border, the Rafah border crossing. Becky, just before we went on air, I was invited to do an interview on what's going on in Gaza, the siege and the rest. It'll be on Thursday. I look forward to it. I have two others on another topic this week. Keeping busy, Becky, keeping busy. I do enjoy it. It's important to do, and I very much want to do it as much as I can.
Well, it's wonderful work you're doing, Steve, to get these different voices on. And I'm so glad you'll be talking with people in Gaza. We get messages from them that that they know that we're here, and they're heartened by that. And that's always encouraging. The border here is due to be open probably 3 days at the end of the month. And this is what the new practice the Egyptian government has been has had enforced, but they don't tell people in advance which 3 days they're going to be. And the first time I was here in June, when we had the 3 days open, I couldn't believe the treatment, the harsh treatment that people, the Palestinians, received from the soldiers and the police at the border. It was just unconscionable. I've never seen people treated this way. You wouldn't treat your animals the way they were treated. And at the same time, they were so happy to be going into Gaza that they again withstood it. I want to just mention something else. One of the things that the Border Patrol tells me on my daily visit to ask if the border's open is today the story was the problem is Hamas. That Hamas isn't letting it open. Well, we know just the contrary, that Hamas is happy to have people come in. They would have been delighted to get all the aid from the FIFA Palestina convoy, and they would love to have the people of their homeland return. But the lies here, and that's one of the things I've learned being at the border, talking with the Border Patrol, is that the only thing you can trust is that everything they say will be a lie. Whether the border will be open, when it will be open, and for whom, and what kind of paperwork you have to have. There's absolutely nothing that can that is true that comes out of their mouths. I called the U.S. Embassy on one of my first days here because I had seen Palestinians who are now U.S. citizens who were detained at the border. And so I called the embassy to ask what, if anything, they could do. It's the empire, right? And I was told by the third person up the ranks that there was absolutely nothing the U.S. government could do to help U.S. citizens get across the border.
Well, of course, that's rubbish. That's absolute rubbish. As bad as they treat Palestinians, Packy, months back, the UN Human Rights Rapporteur, Richard Falk, was denied entry into Israel proper because he made some statements about Israel that the Olmert government at the time didn't approve of, so they detained him. They treated him, they didn't beat him up, of course, but they treated him very gruffly. They held him in detention. They made him very uncomfortable, short of really being abusive. But, of course, that's abusive. And he's an official UN person on the ground. They treated him that way. I'm sure they wouldn't allow me in Israel. If I tried to enter Israel and I arrived at Tel Aviv airport, they'd probably treat me a lot worse. unless somehow
they probably
would
just
radar.
Give you a ticket back. Or put you back on the plane.
Well, they'd hold me in detention. It'd make life uncomfortable for a few days. I mean, really uncomfortable for a few days. And then brusquely get you out of the country. But they'd want to send a message to you that you're not welcome. And if you try coming back, we'll treat you even worse than we did this time. And Israel has the nerve to call itself a democratic state. Well, it is.
Right.
Packy, it is not even for all Jewish citizens. There are many Jews, poor Jews, who are treated very poorly in Israel. Months back, I wrote about it. Israel is becoming more like America all the time. It's treating its better off Jewish citizens only, respectably to very well if you're well off enough. but its poorest citizens that comprise a fairly good percentage of the population, maybe a quarter of the population, they are treated very, very poorly. And, of course, Israel is a state that gives rights to Jews alone. It has a million or so, I forget the exact number, I don't have it in front of me, a million or so Israeli Arab citizens of Israel who have no rights whatsoever, no rights. They're treated with utter disdain, and they can be treated rather roughly at times, too. And of course, the Palestinians in the territories, the West Bank and Gaza, are treated like they're criminals. And the West Bank, Gaza is the worst. Gaza is under siege. But make no mistake, and you know this, Becky, Palestinians in the West Bank are treated extremely poorly. The Israeli military...
Oh, yes, that's not even... That doesn't begin to touch it. Walls go up separating you from your garden, when walls go up separating you from another part of your land, there's no question about it. But I wanted to share a little antidote with you and it's more the rationale for this opening the border. Some Europeans were in Gaza recently. They noted that this Gazan was eating food that had come from Israel. And the European, quite rightly, said, you know, we are boycotting Israeli products. And the man from Gaza said, if we boycotted Israeli products, we would have nothing to eat. And I think that's part of why this border has to be open, because right now the people of Gaza are wholly dependent on Israel. And in order for them to have a modicum of respect and worthwhile sense of themselves, they have to be able to earn their own livelihood. They have to be able to have commerce with other parts of the world. And as long as this siege continues, as long as this blockade continues, as long as this border is not open, they can't have commerce or any kind of exchange with the rest of the world. Everything goes through Israel.
That's exactly right. Becky, have you made it into Gaza even for a day or two?
I didn't this time. I was in Gaza in March. I was part of a mental health delegation that went into Gaza just prior to the Code Pink and the George Galloway first Viva Palestina. We were a delegation from the U.S., and we and some Italians and some other Europeans, after the third day we weren't allowed to go in, that third night, we said, well, we're not leaving. So we camped out at the border, and the next day we were able to go in. So that was one of the things that gave impetus to our say, let's camp out at the border. Let's be here to protest until they open this border. Now, the second part of that was we went in with humanitarian aid, not a lot, mostly symbolic, but I think the water filtration systems we brought helped some people in some of the hospitals. But when we were coming back through the gate, back into Egypt, there was a Palestinian woman standing at the gate, wailing, with her hands extended through the gate, holding all of her papers, wanting to go in. And I thought, what is this? These privileged Americans can have, in those days, our embassy helped, but the Americans in our delegation could go in, but the Palestinian woman who wanted to be reunited with her family could not get in. And for me, when we started talking about besieging the siege, about opening this border, that the picture of that woman standing at the border is just etched in my mind.
Becky, even more serious are people needing desperate medical care, treatment, that they cannot get inside Gaza because equipment isn't sufficient, medicines aren't sufficient, there was so much destruction because of the conflict and the siege, and these people may die if they don't get out. People with very, very serious illnesses and injuries, and only in rare cases will Israel allow anyone to cross the border into Jordan or into Egypt to get the kind of care that they cannot get inside Gaza. So they are condemning them probably to die.
Well, we met a family a little over a week ago, that Sunday a week. This was the grandmother, her son, his wife, and his 14-year-old son and 1-year-old daughter. They were waiting at the border, and this was one of the rare occasions when they opened the bathroom for us. So we went to tell the people that the bathrooms were open. And the elder woman, who was not that old, she's 57, said she couldn't get up. She is in dire need of a kidney transplant. And her grandson was traveling with her to accompany her to get the kidney transplant. He is going to give one of his kidneys to his grandmother. Now, they were held all day at the border. That night, we contacted, because she's been allowed, she has papers that will allow her to go to Paris, to go to France, to get the operation. But the Israelis, the Egyptians here, would not allow her to go back into Gaza because the plan was for her to go from Gaza to Tel Aviv to Paris. So we talked with one of our former people who had been here at the border with us, and she said that she would do what she could with the French embassy in Cairo so that these Palestinians, rather than come back and wait at the border until God knows when, could go right from Cairo. So we got all the names and got all the numbers of people, and they were set to go. Many hours later, on the following Wednesday, this family reappeared at the border. Now, Wednesdays are the days that people with medical problems are allowed to go back to Gaza. People who have treatment that they've come out of Gaza for are allowed to go back in. So she was at the border, and I said, so what happened? I thought by now you'd be in France. And they said, no, because they were Palestinians, they weren't allowed to cross the Salam Bridge over the Suez Canal to go to Cairo. So that's another way that the Egyptian government is continuing that stranglehold. Now, if and this story isn't over yet, she did go into a local hospital and have treatment prior to going back to Gaza, which she did last Wednesday. But these are the kinds of medical issues, and we've seen pictures and we've heard stories of people who are waiting for treatment, waiting to be able to get out of Gaza for the treatment they needed, died. You know, there's no question about the lack of any humanitarian concern on either the Israelis or the Egyptians.
And Peggy, there's no reason for this at all. It serves no political or military interest whatsoever. The only explanation is this is, and make no mistake about this, Washington literally controls everything in the sense that Washington supplies Israel with billions of dollars a year in direct aid, in loans, in the latest weapons. If Washington said no more, this would stop today. It would end on the spot. One phone call from Obama to Netanyahu, and it would be over just like that. The right kind of phone call. Not, hello, how are you? Would you mind doing this? Kind of phone call that says, we're establishing a new policy. This is the way it is. You will end the siege. You will open the border. You will do it immediately. You will order it immediately when you hang up this phone. And if you don't, all aid from Washington will henceforth be canceled. All of it. Am I making myself clear? Oh, I wish I could make that phone call. Pretend to be Barack Obama and say, Benjamin,
Yes. This
is the new order. This is the way it is henceforth. I'm sick and tired of what you're doing. And now this is what you will do, or else. Well, of course, that can't happen. But the only reason for inflicting this suffering is to make people suffer so grievously that maybe one day they'll just give up, and either perish or leave. But again, six decades, Paki, this has been going on, beginning in late 1947, continuing for 6 months until Israel declared its independence in mid-May 1948, with Harry Truman being the first country in the world, moments after it happened, to recognize the new Israeli state, the one that exists on stolen Palestinian land, the one that the Western media never reports. They're going back a good many years. Hamas has been willing to recognize Israel, provided that Israel will recognize a Palestinian state on only 22% of original Palestine. And Yasser Arafat was willing to do it going back to the late 1970s. Another break, Paki. Let's take that, and then I'll let you wrap up with some concluding comments.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Egyptian-Gaza border. Paki, what you're doing is so heroic. I hold you in such esteem, such admiration for what you're doing. You're living outside in a tent. You've been there for a good many weeks. You intend to stay there until mission accomplished. My goodness, that's the kind of stuff that should make you a nominee for a Nobel Peace Prize, but instead they give it to the likes of the Henry Kissingers of the world. But wrap up with some final comments.
Listen, Steve, what I'd like, people who are listening, who have time this summer, people who are retired like me, people who are young and have time off from school or want to do something really worthwhile, I think we can win this one. I think we can open the border. And I think if the border is open, it will look like a very small thing. But its repercussions, its ramifications are so vast, and that people can be a part of this really life-changing event for the people of Gaza. And if Gaza is open and they can start having relationships with other countries, with commerce with other people, they will stop being so dependent on everyone's charity and be able to have the dignity that comes with earning your own livelihood, with supporting your own family, not waiting for handouts for someone that you don't want, but right now there's no alternative.
These are wonderful people, Paki, who only want one thing. They want their freedom, the same as everybody wants their freedom. And a repressive Israeli state is not only denying them that, they are literally trying to squeeze the life out of them. It really is a shocking thing. And world complicity, mainly Washington, but world complicity makes it happen. It's hard to believe that.
And the thing is, Steve, it's the government, because people come from all over the world here and are supporting the Palestinian people. It's our governments that don't. And remember that idea that emerged before the U.S. went to war in Iraq, that the people are really the world's second great power. And we have to remind ourselves of that and act it. You know, be that power that we know we have. And we can make a difference. We can make this change.
Absolutely, Packy. I'll take myself as an example. I'm retired. I'm getting up in years. And I can sit by myself at home and reach out and touch the whole world, people all over the world in dozens of countries. Well, my goodness, there are lots of ways to do things like this. You don't have to host a radio program. You can join an organization. You can get informed of these terrible abuses going on that never should happen. And I'll go you one better, Packy. I would say that in enough numbers, grassroots mass numbers are the world's superpower, because if enough of us decide we want something, all the Marines in the world won't stop us.
Hear, hear. You know, I'll just end with something, Steve.
We are out of time. They will cut away momentarily.
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 13. That's what we're standing on.
Steve,
thanks for having us. Thanks for all the good work you keep doing. And someday we will end this siege.
Oh, absolutely, Packy. And this program is open to you anytime in the future when there are important things to discuss. So please remember that.
Thank you so much.
Communicate by email as you're able to do it, Packy. But I welcome you back in.
Okay.
And we will be back tomorrow.
Goodbye to you. Thanks for the invite.
Thank you, Packy.